You know, I just realized I did not ask you about Pat Nixon. Tell me about Pat Nixon.
Oh, Pat, you know, we didn't. That tells you something. That tells you something pertinent, that she was so overlooked as First Lady, and she was had the abilities to do so much more than she was allowed to do. But Nixon's West Wing cadre did not see any real particular value in the president's wife. You know, they would use her for certain things, but they didn't let Pat be Pat. Now, I traveled with her on all of her trips that she did solo, and the first ones were they sent her out much too early, really, to hot spots of poverty programs, and that was very difficult. She ran into jeering crowds. It was not a well thought through trip that her staff threw her out onto really early. Then I was with her in Peru when she went down again solo, when they had that massive earthquake, and the United States came through with plane loads of goods and clothing, and she was down there on the mountaintop, you know, with the local people. She also met with the president of Peru, who had been very difficult with America in the months before she was came. And she smoothed things over to the degree that it was really noticed in diplomatic circles. So she had more talents than the president's hard-eyed men were willing to see. When I went to Africa with Pat Nixon, it was, again, Pat was on her own. We went to, I guess, three countries in Black Africa on the Western nations, Ghana and Ivory Coast and Liberia. She was a sensation. The streets were lined with people leaping and shouting and playing music, and she just blossomed. It was marvelous to see. It was a tremendously successful trip. I think when she was with him, she was just so cast in I'm the little wife, alongside, you know. But when she was on her own, she blossomed into being Pat Ryan again. And I watched that on numerous trips. It was visible. And the strange coldness or distance with which he greeted her after some of those really tough trips at a White House South Lawn greeting, it was just very cold. I remember on coming back from the earthquake trip into Peru, which she had been a wonderful success worldwide, and she met up with him at the Grand Ole Opry, where they were. It was her birthday. Well, he forgot to introduce her, you know, and Roy Acuff, yes, stepped in and very smoothly just did it. But the president was supposed to. I mean, it was just a lack of appreciation for what she could have done. So I feel that's why we forgot to mention her in the first instance in this conversation, is that she was not free to be Pat.
Well, it reminds me also of one other person I did not ask you about, and this one was not really elected to the White House and was a very short term, but yet
Betty Ford. Yes. Betty Ford was a breath of fresh air. She came when the White House had been in its absolute dismal time, coming up to the impeachment and the resignation. And the Fords came in, and they were so unaffected and straightforward and were untarnished by any of the Nixon shenanigans. And she didn't have very long to establish herself, but she brought a breath of openness and fresh air to the White House that was. And let me tell you one other thing she did that was really, really crucial. I remember the day so well. She had been making a speech to a great big group of women's organizations out at one of Washington's major hotels. From that speech, now she stopped at the door because she and I had arranged that we would have our picture taken together there because I was doing a cover story for Time that week on the hard things that face first ladies. Pat Nixon was in travail, well, not just first lady, political-wise. Joan Kennedy had just gone to an alcoholic institution. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, from that meeting that she very nicely addressed this large group, she went straight to the National Institutes of Health for a breast cancer operation. She let nobody know. She was her own smiling self. I think the strength of her to do what she was supposed to do without letting on that she was facing a crisis in her life, to me, that was very impressive. And it showed that this person had great strength in her soul.
And, you know, you mentioned her name today, and she's been gone for quite a while, but I equate it with the Betty Ford Center.
Exactly. She had a tendency to alcoholism. She had that tendency in the White House. They always attributed it to she had shoulder difficulties that she had to take drugs for. They always attributed it that to the painkillers for her bad shoulders. Well, it wasn't really. It wasn't, but that was the way it was supposed to. So when they got out of the White House, then it got worse. And when they retired to Colorado at that time, and President Ford said to his beloved Betty, "We can't go on like this. You have got to do something about this, Betty. I will help you. We will do anything, but you have got to do it yourself." And when he just talked straight to her, she realized that she. And he said, to her, "You're strong, and you've done everything. This you've got to do yourself." So that's when she went for treatment in the California Establishment Facility, and was never afflicted with alcoholism again. But what happened from there, she realized she could turn it into a positive thing in her life, and she established the Betty Ford Clinic. She made alcoholism as a social problem, something you talk about, something you deal with. She made a lasting imprint on who knows how many people across this country who were able to pull themselves out of an alcoholic habit by the inspiration of Betty Ford. So I think she left a tremendous imprint.
Bonnie, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. I really appreciate your time today.
Well, I love talking with you because these experiences, these women were great events in my life and in our history, and I'm just always happy to talk a little bit more about how they really were.